morning, good evening, namaste, and assalamu alaikum to you all. Welcome to Knowledge Webcast. With me is Ian, who is one of the most notable knowledge management expert, who had 40 plus years of IT and knowledge management experience. It's a great privilege that I am with him, and he has agreed to be my first guest on this show. Welcome, Ian. It's a great pleasure to have you here. And I really would like to, you know, understand who is Ian, what's his journey, and, you know, what he thinks about KM standards, and, you know, what's his view, vision. Probably up and personal, I want to really get to know about Ian. So just the platform is this for us, and we want to, you know, have the conversation around this. So welcome.
Thank you very much, Sanchika. I guess a bit of background. I've got over 50 years IT experience, ranging through all roles within IT. I'm still contracting. I'm still writing software and developing software. Between 2003 and 2010, I worked with a client who was selling knowledge on subscription. This was technical knowledge about insurance. And so we built a series of websites to do that. And that was very successful commercially and very successful in meeting its objectives. So in 2010, we won the Australasian, that's Australia-New Zealand Award for the insurance industry for innovation. And at the same time, we were awarded an ACT KM Gold Medal for the knowledge management that we'd undergone. Because this was a significant attempt to transfer explicit knowledge to improve the way in which brokers worked, and it worked very well. So at the same time, I was again building a lessons learned system for the local fire authority. And that again was very successful and worked very well. So from those two IT projects, it suddenly dawned on me that there might be something in this knowledge management area. And that's when I became NOCO Australia and part of NOCO, and people will know of Nick Milton, who's the principal worldwide of that, and we're now in 20 countries. So that I've done, I then do the normal NOCO methodologies, you know, frameworks, strategy, training, and that sort of thing. But I would class myself as my long suit, if you'll call it that, is lessons learned. And I have developed a lessons learned piece of software, which implements Nick Milton's book, A Practical Guide to Lessons Learned. And that's very important because it acts as the pivot and the controlling vector around doing lessons learned. Most people fail to do it, fail to do it well, and we find that people are using this software really have to be disciplined. And they have to do it the right way. So that's, and I've got clients all over the world with that software. I could have more if people want to sign up, but certainly that's where I fit. So I guess in terms of where I'm headed, I've found it quite difficult to talk to people, and certainly the C-suite, directly about knowledge management. It does not necessarily float their boat. So I've tended to focus on, I guess, three areas. One is project management. And I think I've spoken at four of the last Australian project management conferences. Quality, and I've spoken at the Australian Organisation of Quality conferences. Training and development, I've delivered webinars for them. Australian Computer Society, I've delivered webinars for them. So trying to bring knowledge management out into these sub areas, if you like, to the actual implementation areas. And the other thing I've been, I guess, working on in 2020 during the COVID is looking at software in a couple of areas. One is call center software, which purports to do knowledge management. There's process mapping software, which purports to do knowledge management. And trying to look and see if we can get an overarching strategy and framework into those organizations, because they tend to get the software, They tend to more or less do part of it, but the overall knowledge management is missing. So that's my current focus. Okay. So where I am in South Australia, we have been very successful with COVID, but because of the interstate border closures, I haven't been able to travel. We've been relying on Zoom, and there has not been a lot of consulting going on in knowledge management in Australia in 2020. The other thing that happened was that Arthur Shelley stepped down as the chair of the Standards Australia Committee on Knowledge Management, which is ISO 30401, and it was suggested that I take over. So through 2020, I have been, or in late 2019, I've been chair of that group, and therefore I sit on the TC260 Working Group 6, which is the standard, and I've been working with that group to finalise the definitions, which have now all been accepted and will go into ISO 30400, the vocabulary for human resources. So that's been another activity this year. But that's basically it. I guess I would be considered a bit of a guerrilla KM. I'm a person. Although we'll do the framework and the framework and strategy, I think we have to work at the detail level, or be prepared to get anywhere.
Excellent. So, that's really where I'm at today. Ian, I mean, it's really amazing, you know, from I hear from you, especially I want to talk about one topic first, you know, even though I had multiple topics to start with. I really want to know how knowledge management, especially in this COVID times, as in, you know, being part of the Australian knowledge management movement, how knowledge management is helping in any way to deal with the pandemic. You know, is there some case studies or examples which you can share?
Well, the pandemic came to us in March after a horrific bushfire season in November and December. So a lot of people and organizations were doubly hit. We have only just finished, or are still doing actually, the lessons learned from that bushfire season. And the next bushfire season has started. So that gives you some idea of the tasks involved there. It has been huge exercises, thousands and thousands of observations, because these were mega fires. And the thing that's happened in a knowledge management sense is that the lessons learned component has now shifted towards resilience and recovery and resilience, and it's been greatly expanded in that area. So that's within those fire and emergency services. We've had the same sort of thing happen with the pandemic itself, in that there hasn't been a lot of after-action reviews, but there's been a lot of continual learning going on, and readaption of techniques and even technologies, because what happens in Australia is the same emergency centres which were stood up for the fire season were stood up for the COVID. So the same thing, the same logistics managers, the same incident controllers are in the emergency centres for both disasters. That brings a lot of tacit knowledge, a lot of incident experience to the way in which we handle things like the pandemic. But what has happened is that, first of all, Australia closed all its international borders. And they are not open, apart from some New Zealand components. The second thing is that we closed all state borders, the seven states, and only some of those are open. So we can't just go and see a client. A lot of work on Zoom. I think what's happened is that people have got used to working from home. I think there's a lot of extra copies of documents sitting on private computers, which is going to be a cyber problem. But I think the forced conversations by having to group around a Zoom meeting have been quite interesting. They
your behavior.
There may have been a number of one-on-one conversations in the office when face-to-face, but I think now that we're having Zoom meetings where everybody is in, maybe an improvement, but I've got no evidence of that yet, but I think it might be better. But I think what we have to do is to very much look at the fact that many organizations won't get all their employees back. There will be a loss of knowledge. You won't know about it because everybody at the moment, I think, is focusing on business as usual and not in terms of going forward. So every organization is struggling. And some industries, once the government incentives here in Australia, which have been extremely generous, once they stop around March, we're expecting an onslaught of closures. Within hospitality, tourism, travel, they will not survive.
Completely shut down, right?
Yeah. So that's where I am in South Australia. We can still go to work. In other states like Victoria, you can't.
So that really opens up, from what you mentioned about the lot of tacit knowledge and a lot of documentation residing in individuals' desktop today, and with more and more culture of working from home has become more prevalent now. Now, how do you see, I want to take this one case and really look at in terms of, from the perspective of standard, let's say as in practical case, if you have to bring the standard and look at the real-time scenario now, how do you think standard could uplift these challenges or empower to resolve these challenges? Yeah, probably you could share your views and opinions,
In NOCO, we talk about four legs of the table: people, process, technology, and governance. Now, the standard is all about governance. And it's only about governance, quite deliberately, only about governance. There used to be a standard, AAS 3571, which was the Australian standard on how to do knowledge management. It was a set of guidelines, which I guess has been repeated by numerous books, the K Knowledge Manager Handbook and the cookbooks and things like that. But that was the standard on how to do KM. If you're going to do communities of practice, then you need to tick these boxes. The standard is not about that. The standard is all about the governance. Now, where the knowledge artifacts are is irrelevant. It's how they're controlled. So, and this is where I come to the software side of it. If you've got content, you have to record, according to the standard, who curated it, the date it was released, who's going to review it, the date for review, and who's going to approve the reviewing. All of that has to be done, and it doesn't matter where the artifact sits. If that is sitting in multiple copies on multiple home PCs, you've got a real problem. So if that's all stored internally and people have got access to it, it's a lot simpler. But they're the sorts of things that I think the standard brings to us, in that it's saying, you will have a knowledge strategy, and it will be aligned with your organization strategy. It's very interesting to see that when we do a knowledge strategy, every single thing we propose is linked to the corporate strategy. And that's very important, because I see people tweeting on where do you start with KM. Well, obviously you start with the business. Fairly obvious. But there's no point in doing a knowledge management plan and setting up a structure if it's not directly related to what the business wants done every day, because you will lose out in the C-suite, because they'll just see knowledge management as an expensive overhead. And that's one of the things that I believe is the strong point of doing lessons learned, because with lessons learned, we actually record at the start how much money you're going to make if you fix this. It's one of the few areas of KM where we actually put a dollar value on the KM activity. Even if the lessons are minor, it's surprising how quickly they add up.
Yeah. It's interesting, Ian, to hear your opinion and how you see the standard. Since I'm a host, I'm not going to I'm just going to listen. I'm not going to respond or comment on this. This is completely, it's your view show, and we want to get as much as, what people think. And that is also one of the important reason why this web chat is about. So now, is there any difference between what standard you're looking at developing in Australian standard, or you're kind of looking at using ISO? What is the plan and what is the outlook?
That Australian standard has lapsed and is no longer current.
The reason
I mentioned it is that that was an attempt back in 2013 or something to actually do a standard on knowledge management as an advisory standard. It's been overtaken by, there's just so much good literature around now on how to do it it's not worth rewriting. The importance of this ISO standard, and so that's been adopted in Australia as an Australian standard. The important standard is this, that when we talked about people, process, technology, and we started to talk about, well, what does that mean? What do you have to do? And you start to talk about, culture, safe fail cultures, and you begin to talk about IT actually pulling their finger out and supporting knowledge management, and you talk about capture processes and the processes around lessons learned. It's all fairly clear. But when we talk to people about governance, they said, well, what does that mean? What do we have to do? And, what the standard has done for us is to spell out exactly what governance means. Right? What it actually means. So if you parallel the standard with 9001, 9001 is not about quality. It's the management of your quality system.
Yeah.
It's not about the quality system. It's the management of the quality system. So 30401 is not about KM. It's about the management of your KM. It's about that governance. And it's a very strong standard in that respect.
I do agree. So now, is there certain specific areas which you think there's a strong pushback from the people who are trying to implement standard, or is there strong pull?
Well, I think there's a couple of things. One we've seen today post, the nuclear industry have made it compulsory. All right, and to give you just to give you a feel for those who aren't involved in it, I saw a tender for the nuclear industry, which had these phrases in it. You will tell me how you will learn lessons in the course of this project. You'll tell me how you're going to share those lessons with me. That's the
Very specific.
The governing authority. You will tell me how you're going to share your lessons with every other contractor on the site.
Excellent.
There's the problem. There's
too detailed. Well,
no, there's the problem. You've got Westinghouse and GE both on the same site, and they're being told they're going to have to share their lessons with each other. Now, that's so the extent to which the nuclear industry. It's problematic in terms of corporate sovereignty. Who owns the lesson? Who owns the lesson learned? Is it the contractor, or is it the body they're contracted to?
So one of the things which, from my experience in lessons learned, I'm from oil and gas industry. It's really interesting to learn about what your idea vision is to have medical related lessons learned national level with Australia. What are the other things? Just to understand from the national scale, Australia has kind of, geared up for this knowledge management programs or initiative. Would you want to kind of talk a bit about the national scale? When did they start? Is it something which you are involved or are you aware of?
I'm a member of ACT KM, which is the national body, and we do talk regularly. You'd have to say that knowledge management's had a fair penetration in Australia. Those people who are doing it tend to be doing it very well. So the people who've taken it seriously have got a lot of return out of it. I think very few companies have walked away from knowledge management in Australia. The problem is a lot of people need it, but don't do it. And that's because Australian companies on a world scale tend to be very small. So, 20, $30 million turnover would be a reasonable size company in Australia. Where we are perhaps lacking, I think, is in terms of formal knowledge management around health and education. Those two areas are areas where we could do a lot better as a nation. The knowledge sharing there is still, and of course lawyers are a problem. Lawyers are always a problem. The legal firms which are open tend to be going well, but lawyers, like project managers, tend to want to say, it's my bright, shiny knowledge. I'm not going to share it. My credentials within the company depend on what I know. It becomes a little bit competitive. And so you still have issues like that. But we are seeing, I think, relatively better tender calls. We're seeing, I think, relatively better approaches around knowledge management. Mm-hmm. I still think that there's a long way to go, and I mentioned leveraging off software before, but I think we've got a long way to go in Australia.
Okay. On a large scale, do you think most of the Australian companies have embraced knowledge management as a discipline, or at least what percentage do you think? I mean, if you have,
5%.
Right. Okay.
5% of the majors. There's been a lot of activity in change management, digital upgrades, and that sort of thing, but they have missed out on also doing a knowledge upgrade. There's a lot of emphasis on content, but not a lot of emphasis on the overarching structures and governance around all that. You can still see people complaining about silos. You can still see an awful lot of content which is out of date or wrong, it's just not good. So a lot of the disciplines which the standard brings are not being observed. So if you just look at some of that and say, well, forget knowledge management. How are you controlling the content? How are you curating the content? How are you looking after it? And apply it directly to the knowledge artifact, then the standard really comes into play, because you're saying, well, what's the overall structure around what you're trying to do? I mean, with my insurance guy, it was quite clear. We transferred knowledge that people were prepared to pay for. And there was a lot of low-hanging fruit that we did because people were prepared to pay for it. I was prepared to pay a premium to get this thing. It was dead simple to do. It in our structure about what we were trying to change, it wasn't important, but people were prepared to pay for it. And I think, you need to take that sort of approach when you're working internally. How can I give the people what they say they want, but within the structure of the knowledge management framework?
True, truly said.